away we go. Take it to Hovind on Monday. We've got one down, four to go with your work weekend. This is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix. I am Brett Rump along with Caleb Hatch. Exciting hour ahead. So many things to talk about. No guests, so it's all us and you on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862 as we ask, what are memorable choke jobs in sports? Some of the all-time choke jobs, let us know at 46862. Of course, maybe one of the most remembered or favorite choke jobs is not even a real choke job. It's the choke sign that Reggie Miller gave to Spike Lee with the Pacers and the Knicks. And, you know, I think I'm not alone, Caleb. I always associated that symbol or that gesture as being tied in to the 8 points, 9 seconds, whatever it was, the heroic moment that he had at the end of the playoff game in Madison Square Garden. And you're saying, no, they're actually two separate events.
Yeah, the choke sign happened the year before on June 1st, 1994. Pacers were trailing the Knicks by 12 points going into the fourth quarter. It was game five of the Eastern Conference Finals. And that's when Reggie Miller had the 25-point fourth quarter. And perhaps, I would say, arguably, his greatest performance that he's ever had was that one, even greater than the 8 points in 9 seconds. So,
is that the series, though, they went on to lose?
Yeah, they lost both.
Did they lose both those series?
They lost the 25-point fourth quarter one. The 8 points, 9 seconds, I believe they also lost that series as well. I mean, the Pacers and Knicks, it was always a big rivalry, and then they finally beat them. I believe this would have been when they advanced to the NBA Finals.
Mm-hmm.
It was the time they finally got past the Knicks.
46862, let us know some of yours. Of course, that came in our Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Also, we've got the Falcons 28-3. I had that one noted on my list. That was the Super Bowl where the Falcons had the 28-3 lead, and the team from New England came back and beat them in the Super Bowl. Also, what are some others that we've got? Oh, here's one that I think a lot of people are not even aware of because he's considered one of the greatest that's ever played the game of golf. But Arnold Palmer has one of the most famous choke jobs in all of golf, and it came in the 1966 U.S. Open. He had a 7-shot lead with 9 holes to play. And the great Arnold Palmer completely fell apart. I think he ended up 5 over on his last 9 holes, ended up getting passed up, ended up losing the tournament. And obviously, he had many moments that erased that memory from his memory bank. But Arnold Palmer, one of the biggest choke jobs in all of golf back in the 1966 U.S. Open. Other famous chokes. How about that damn kicker? Mike Vanderjagt. How about the shank to the left on the 46-yarder? Caleb, you know, you've been a follower of Colts football for your entire life. In my mind, that team was the best Colts team. I think that team was better than the one that won the Super Bowl. And they got themselves into a position against the Steelers with me sitting in the front row of the dome right down by the goalpost where that kick ended up going wide to the left. Now, I was at an angle to the goalpost. I was sitting over toward the side, so I was looking right down the line where the goalposts were at. So when he kicked it, I couldn't tell from depth perception if the kick, I could tell it was long enough, but I couldn't tell you if it was left, right, or other. And all I did was watch the fans. As I saw the ball go long enough, I looked at the fans behind, and they're all doing the cobra, you know.
The surrender cobra.
Yeah, the surrender cobra. And I could just tell by the way they were looking and the reactions that they had, this was not going to be a good kick.
Yeah, that team, unfortunately, everyone forgets about. And like you said, the 2005 team, which was that team, the 2007 team even, and the 2009 team were all better than the 2006 team for the Colts, by far. In fact, the 2007 team, remember, took the Patriots down to the wire, and the Patriots were undefeated in the regular season that year. So, unfortunately, that kick ruined the possibility of a very special season continuing.
46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Let us know what is somebody that you remember as an all-time favorite choke job or biggest choke job in sports. I can't believe no one's mentioned this one yet. World Series. Boston, New York. Bill Buckner at first base. Now, we all remember what happened on that ground ball that went right through Buckner, and it led to the Mets getting the comeback in Game 6. They eventually won in Game 7, and that play, unfortunately, Bill Buckner had a terrific career. I mean, he was a great ball player, but he is forever remembered. In my mind, that's the play that everybody remembers Bill Buckner by. And it's a shame because he had so many great years with the Cubs. Cubs fans remember Buckner. You know, had years with the Dodgers and, of course, with the Boston Red Sox. But unfortunately, that play was the one that's always going to be associated with Bill Buckner, as that ground ball through the wickets that led to the comeback for the New York Mets and eventually a Mets win in the World Series.
A bunch just came in. Some we've mentioned. Vandeveld at the British Open. I don't recall this, but I know what he's referencing.
Yeah.
Someone else said the Cavs free throw line in the finals. I'm not sure which year.
I think for the Vandeveld was the one where all he had to do was avoid the water.
Mm-hmm. And of course.
And of course hit it right into the water.
Cavs free throw line in the finals. Would this have been 2017? But the J.R. Smith LeBron meme was that 2017 or 18? I guess that would have been 18.
You know, I get my years confused because 2020 didn't exist, but it kind of did exist. But
yeah.
wasn't the regular sports year, and yet 2020 in basketball did have a championship. It just didn't happen the way normal championships happen. Everything kind of gets confusing to me as to when. You know, I used to always think, oh, that was 3 years ago or that was 4 years ago. And now I can't do that as much anymore. 2020 has really thrown me off for my memory bank over recent seasons.
Oh, because you exclude it in your year bank and then you realize, oh, no, that still counts.
There was something. Yeah, there was something that actually counted. It wasn't played normally, but it still counted.
I always think the Masters
being played in the fall. Oh. It's like, do you remember who got the green coat in November?
I know it was Dustin Johnson, but
yeah, it was. But I mean, it wasn't the same. I just don't know. The whole year kind of just threw me off and has thrown me off for a number of sports events. It's like Indy 500. Almost forgot it even existed in 2020.
Because that's for the best. It wasn't a good race.
but it's that way for so many sports that got moved around and shuffled. It's just hard to remember exactly. Okay, what did get played? What didn't get played? Because, you know, they didn't end up playing the Open Championship, but then they played a couple of the other majors and they just moved them. It was just a crazy year all around. But of course, we're leading up to the choke that happened yesterday. Lexi Thompson, unfortunately, the only American in the running. Now, I know one of the darlings of the crowd was the amateur, what was she, 16 or 17 year old amateur that had torn up the field on Saturday and was actually in contention and played in the final group on Sunday, but she didn't have quite the same round on Sunday. But you could tell she just absolutely thrilled to be part of the event and playing as well as she did for the weekend. And I can't remember her name, but she was part of the U.S. Open story. But Lexi Thompson had what seemed to be almost full control of this tournament, and then by her own accord, she gave it up. I mean, you know, it's one thing if somebody starts hitting eagles and birdies and just putting a score together that you can't compete with. That wasn't the case. And I was reading some comments on social media, and I've got to agree that a lot of the blame for this shouldn't go on just Lexi Thompson, because she's not alone out there. She's the one hitting the shots, but she's got a caddy for a reason. A caddy's out there to keep you focused, to keep you on strategy as far as what club do you use, what part of the green are you aiming for, where do you want to hit each shot. And, you know, a caddy can't control a hook on a tee shot that goes into the rough, but he can control what happens from that point forward, where you set up your approach and different things. But it just seemed like she hit way too many shots short. And in many cases, it was club selection. She was never going to get the ball to the distance she needed to get it using the club that she had chosen to use. And a lot of that goes on the caddy. And then coming up short on those putts, just, you know, the one thing, they never go in if they don't get to the hole. That's, you know, that's pretty much the law of physics. And she just fell apart. One of the big choke jobs that we've seen in a major in some time. And it was sad to watch. And it was tough to see. But congratulations to the young lady that ended up winning. I don't even know, because I turned it off once Lexi Thompson ended up out of it and had the bogey on the 18th. 46862, choke jobs in sports, 46862. Let us know some of them that you've got on your mind. By the way, coming up, J.R. Hildebrand. Oh, yeah, you remember this one. I mean,
yeah,
my goodness.
How could I forget the biggest rookie
mistake at the absolute worst time of the race.
I mean, you're perfect through, what, 799 left turns, and then on the 800th, left turn, you come across some lap traffic who's going slower. Charlie Kimball ran out of fuel, and you get too high up in the groove, you slam into the wall. At least he kept his foot in the throttle to finish second, but I mean, that's just brutal.
And the thing was, he had a big enough lead that if he...
Yeah.
Now, here again, we talked about the caddy with Lexi Thompson. How much of this do you put on the spotter? Because shouldn't there be a spotter that is seeing that Kimball is ahead and slowing down? Shouldn't somebody have pulled?
It'd be pretty difficult for the spotter. I mean, because Kimball had just ran out of fuel and was coasting. It'd be pretty difficult for the spotter. However,
it happened that fast?
Yeah, it happened that fast. However, with the team, I mean, they just should have coached him throughout the final few laps. So like, you know, if you come across lap cars, your lead is safe. Like, you know, back off. I don't know what was said on the radio, you know, through all that. But, yeah, I mean, you feel bad for the guy because that's become his defining moment as a race car driver. And he was a talented up-and-coming guy up until that moment.
Yeah. And
but that's all anyone knows him for.
Is there anybody else in the 500? I mean, that moment certainly sticks out. Is there anybody else in the 500 that... I mean, a lot of race teams have had bad luck, but I don't know that we could call them choke jobs.
Yeah, the Andretti's have had bad luck. As far as choke jobs, yeah, 95, Scott Goodyear passing the pace car before the final restart, gave the race to Jacques Villeneuve. I mean, that was an obvious one. He got Goodyear got black flagged, was leading. He was going to win. He passed the pace car on the restart, like before the restart, and he stayed out on the track, you know, in protest, and it didn't matter. So that's kind of the other one for the 500 I would think of.
Yeah, mistake. I guess you'd call that a choke. I mean, a mistake you just can't make in that situation.
Yeah.
46862, let us know some of your memorable choke jobs in sports. 46862, got another one that came in too. 69 Cubs falling to the Mets and losing the pennant to the New York Mets. What else do we have? Hildebrand, we just mentioned. We'll check the text line, 46862. Get caught up on these when we return. It's a Monday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump with Caleb Hatch. We're talking big-time choke jobs in sports. Yesterday, Lexi Thompson had a five-shot lead in the U.S. Open final round. Wasn't able to hold on, and much of that was because of her own accord. She shot a final round 75. All it would have taken was a 73, and she would have won by a shot, and she couldn't manage to get a 73. And like I said, a lot of people that I saw on social media calling out her caddy for not being there to remind her to use three woods off the tee. You didn't have to drive it because she was obviously struggling managing the driver. I couldn't figure out her balance on her drive. She was kind of hopping and jumping on her feet and losing her balance. She did that on a couple of chip shots. Now, I know the chip shots are tough because that rough was so thick you had to really muscle it. And it's different for a woman trying to hit it out of the rough than sometimes the guys like a Bryson DeChambeau, a Brooks Koepka, or somebody like that who's hitting it through the grass. But I understand that exactly, why they would point the finger somewhat at the caddy who is responsible for some of those types of decisions that, you know, you keep it in the fairway when you got a five-shot lead. You don't take the risk of going into the rough, especially if the rough is going to be that penalizing that you're going to have trouble getting par and probably will face a bogey And in some cases, her case, she ended up with a double bogey one time when she went into the rough off the tee. So it was a rough day. But of course, some of the chokes we've got, the 28-3 Falcons lead over the Patriots. We remember that one. Also, somebody had mentioned the 35-3 game, which was that a playoff? That was a playoff game, right? A wild card playoff game?
AFC wild card playoff game between the Oilers and Bills. Yeah, Frank Reich, the hero.
The hero as the backup quarterback. Of course, he was backing up Jim Kelly at the time, who was out. So Frank Reich took over, and he ended up leading that comeback from a 35-3 deficit over the Houston Oilers. And I think that still goes down as the largest comeback in the NFL up to this point.
In the playoffs.
In the playoffs. So what are some of the big choke jobs that you remember? 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. This weekend, the Clippers got the job done. They eliminated Dallas. Luka is finished. And man, I'll tell you what, this was fun yesterday. You had two stars, NBA stars, both just playing their hearts out, trying to lead their team to Game 7 wins. And unfortunately for Luka, he didn't really have a whole lot of help. He ended up with 42, and then you had Kawhi Leonard, who went off and kind of had the fourth quarter run for the Clippers. He took over the game, and the Clippers end up winning it at the Staples Center, becoming the first team in the series to win a home game as they get the win. Now, here's the thing, is it was not Paul George that played the Robin. It was actually Marcus Morris that played the Robin yesterday. 7 of 9 from 3 for Marcus Morris Sr., and he ends up kind of being I guess the Robin. To me, he probably was the difference in the game, the way he was hitting threes. And in their rotations, with the way Kawhi was attacking, it seemed like Morris was the guy they were willing to leave open, and he ended up making him pay for it. He was 7 of 9 from beyond the arc. Now, the Clippers, their reward for winning this series against Dallas after overcoming the 2-0 deficit where they lost the first two home games and then came back and eventually won the series 4-3, is they now get Utah, the top seed in the West. It will be, to me, probably a 5, maybe 6-game series. I just, you know how I believe in the Sixers, and I've said this all along. This isn't something new just because the Sixers got beat this weekend by the Hawks. I've said this all season, that I'm not a big believer in the Sixers, that I feel like the East still comes down to between Brooklyn and Milwaukee, and I think the Sixers were somewhat exposed. Joel Embiid played, but I think you saw some of the weaknesses and question marks you have with this Sixers roster, and it kind of starts with Ben Simmons and his ability, number one, to hit free throws, number two, not to be able to shoot three-pointers. He was 7 for 7 from the field, but everything was a 2, and then at the free throw line, just 3 for 10 in the first game of the series against the Hawks, and as a result, Atlanta ends up winning game one. Is this, is this indicative of what we can expect from this series, or is this just the typical feel them out first game and then the team that's supposed to win rolls and kind of like the Utah? I'm thinking of the Utah-Memphis series where Memphis goes in, surprises Utah game one. Utah makes their adjustments. They get it straight and they end up rolling through the next four games. Do you expect the Sixers to bounce back, or is this a long series?
I expect a bounce back. The Hawks have overachieved all season. Trae Young is good. I wouldn't say he has much around him. I think the Sixers will regroup. I think they'll bounce back. Personally, the series that is more intriguing to me, Bucks-Nets, because I think the Bucks have a legitimate shot to take down the Nets.
Yes, and I like the Bucks in this series because they play defense. And I think ultimately, you're going to have games in this series because I think it's going to be a tight series. I think it's going to go down to 6 or 7 games, and I think there'll be times where defense will matter. I think, in fact, Caleb, I think we've got a very recent example of how defense can change a series in the late games. I think the Clippers' ability to defend, and specifically Kawhi Leonard's ability to defend on Luka Doncic, was maybe the difference in the series in Game 6 and 7. And I think that's what we're going to see eventually in this Bucks-Nets series is, you know, you got a long series. You're not going to put your best player on their best player the entire time. But I think you're going to have some matchups that when it gets to a critical point of the game or in the series, I think then you go to those matchups. And whether that's Giannis on Durant, whether that's Durant on Giannis, however it ends up coming down, I think the team that plays the better defense is the team that can win those close games in a game six or a game seven. And that's why I give slight advantage to Milwaukee. Now, I think if Brooklyn wins this series, they've got to get the job done probably in five games or less. They won game one, but James Harden is out tonight. Will that make a difference? If you had any one of the big three out, as far as Kyrie, Harden, or Durant, which one of those three would hurt you the least and which one would hurt you the most? To me, the least would be Kyrie. Because I think
I would agree with
Harden
that.
And Durant are more difficult matchups, and they're capable, I think, of putting up bigger points. Harden also has picked up a role as a distributor. He's not just a scorer, and it's something we've never really seen that much of from Harden, but he's accepted the role. He is distributing. And so I think this is an important loss. I think, you know, this is an impactful loss on Brooklyn. Do they still have enough talent to win? Probably. You know, they could absorb it.
You would hope.
but I mean, you lose a James Harden and you still could pick this team in a right mind to win. That just tells you how good and talented this roster is. Because James Harden's, you know, top five, top 10 player in the league. And you can take that guy from the lineup and still have a lineup that could beat a team like the Milwaukee Bucks. But, you know, I think tonight's an important game for Milwaukee. I think you have to take advantage of the fact that Harden's not playing. And I believe the game is tonight, isn't it? I'm trying to remember the schedule because they've thrown some things off with extra days off here and there. And I just want to make sure if I say it's a game tonight that it is tonight. But you take Harden out of the lineup, and that's a 7:30 start tonight on TNT. The late game is the Nuggets and the Suns, which that's going to be a heck of an intriguing series as well. But I give an advantage in that to the Suns because I think eventually the Nuggets are going to pay for not having Jamal Murray. And I think that is tonight is this series is where the Nuggets are going to pay for that. But without Harden, I think that Milwaukee needs to take advantage. They need to steal this game without Harden in the lineup. We don't know how long he's going to be out. And so you want to take advantage of the opportunities that are presented. I think this is an opportunity for Milwaukee, and I think they have to take advantage of it. And so for that reason, I'm going to pick Milwaukee. I know that Milwaukee, according to Vegas, is a one-point favorite. I think I'll give the point. I'll take Milwaukee tonight to even up this series. Because in my mind, if there's a series that's being played right now that has seven games written on it, that's the series.
I'm going to go one more and pick Milwaukee to win the series. And I think I'd love to see a Bucks-Suns series.
Would be interesting. Why do you want to see that as your series? I guess we all have our personal reasons, either players we want to see, matchups we want to see. What?
I think it's just, you know, the NBA has been LeBron for so long, and rightfully so. He's been the best player in the game. But you have Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is, you know, what, a two-time MVP. You have Devin Booker. Two of the top scorers in the league. I mean, Antetokounmpo is a complete player. Booker is getting there. Then you throw in, you know, Middleton. You throw in Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton. I mean, it's just these are younger, exciting teams
that you don't get to see on the main stage enough. So
Correct. Let's
give them the stage. Let them play for the big prize because it's not going to be LeBron. It's not going to be Steph. We did have a question earlier that came in on our text line. Probably a good time to ask this question. When LeBron steps aside and finally retires and leaves the game, who's the next wave that's going to be the face of the NBA? You know, and this always is transitional. This, you know, there's, I think in a lot of ways, there's always multiple faces, but clearly LeBron's been the most dominant player of the generation.
I think LeBron and Steph have been co-faces of the NBA for at least 5 years now.
And that's where I'm at. I'm like, Steph, I don't know how many years he has and how, if he will outlast LeBron. I would think he might outlast LeBron for a couple of years. But I will tell you that depending on the direction Milwaukee goes, the direction that Giannis goes, I think Giannis is a very likable guy that as he gets more attention and more exposure, I think more of the country will embrace him. Luka Doncic, is he
That's
going
the other
to
guy
be the
I would
guy?
Throw in.
He's a fun guy to watch as a basketball fan because he can do so many unique things and with a body that's, what, 6'9", 6'9 and a half, and about 50 pounds overweight. I think he's a terrific player. I still say, though, that he's got to get himself in shape. And I know, Caleb, you think that that's part of his game. I think he needs to get in better shape because I think some of the decline in second half numbers for Luka over the course of the playoffs, I think, are because he's not in the greatest shape compared to some of the players. I think he would be better off and probably have less risk of injury, probably have a longer career if he drops about 20, 25 pounds. That's me. But he's a fantastic player. He could be the face of the NBA. There's the villains, too. And to me, Trae Young is starting to take on the role of the villain. Not necessarily a Kyrie Irving-type villain, but Trae Young is kind of the bad boy. I mean, he's the one that's going to talk a pretty good game and rather talk out loud where you can see him talking on the court. I don't know if he's an embraceable face of the NBA because I think the face of the NBA has to be a likable guy, and it has to be a likable guy that women will like. Because the one thing about LeBron and Steph, and this is the way I can gauge them, is if I'm watching a game and my wife will come in and watch the game with me because that player is playing, then I know that's somebody who could be marketable and could be a face of the NBA. LeBron and Steph were two of those players that for the last few years, my wife would stop. Those are about the only two players. But of course, part of that is because she got exposed to them by watching them in NBA Finals games. And that's why I think it's important for guys like Giannis to make an NBA Finals. I think he could be a future face of the NBA, but I think he's got to play for a championship. And I don't know if he's even got to win it, but he's got to play for a championship at least. Who else do you think has the shot of being a future face of the NBA? I mean, to me, those are the strongest candidates. I don't see a Devin Booker who's a terrific scorer and could be a star player, even if Phoenix makes it to the finals. I don't see him as being the face because you know what will happen. Everybody will say, hey, it's the State Farm commercials guy. You know, nobody will even notice Devin Booker. They'll all notice Chris Paul, the State Farm guy.
Zion?
You know,
but he's got to make the playoffs first.
I mean, New Orleans has to be something. Now, I hear that there's talk that New Orleans is going to do some major moving this offseason and a lot of packaging to make some deals and try to bring in stars into New Orleans to play with LeBron. It sounds to me like Lonzo is pretty safe and Lonzo's pretty safe and Zion is safe, but that they're trying to figure out how do they get the best pieces around them. And so that'll be an interesting move down in New Orleans. But another name that was mentioned as far as possible moves, I don't know where this came from, and I don't know the situation, if it's a trade, if it's a free agent move. Somebody was talking today, and I just happened to catch it on the radio, that they have so-called confirmed stories that it's a possible landing spot for Porzingis, Kristaps Porzingis, is the Pacers. Your thought, Caleb, when you hear me say Porzingis to the Pacers?
I would assume this would be a trade where the Pacers would trade Miles Turner.
Well, that's the other part of this, is that Miles Turner, multiple sources are saying that the Pacers do have Miles Turner's name out there and they are considering trade options for Miles Turner. That's a move to me that's long overdue. And I'm not anti-Miles. People think that I just hate Miles Turner. No, I don't. I respect what he does do, but I think there's some parts of his game that are missing that the Pacers desperately need. Part of that is rebounding. and having a big body defender. And so there are things that I think the Pacers need that they don't get from Miles Turner. And that's why I say a trade should at least be considered. And I've talked about this for almost 2 years. And so to hear this, it doesn't surprise me, because I think eventually this day was going to come. And the question was, you hope that the Pacers don't make the decision to move on from Sabonis because they're loyal to Miles, and because Miles may cost them less. But it sounds to me like the Pacers are making the decision that Miles is going to be the one that they will listen to as far as trade offers. So if it's Turner to Dallas for Porzingis, does this excite you? It does nothing for me. I don't know what it does for you.
It doesn't really do anything. I don't think it makes the Pacers better.
No, I don't. I don't see one thing that the Pacers really get better at by bringing in Porzingis, because the things that Miles Turner can't do or hasn't done well enough aren't things you're going to get out of Porzingis. So it makes no sense to me. That to me is a little bit of an issue. 46862 is our Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862. Let us know your biggest chokes in sports. Let us know your thoughts, too, about what the Pacers should do with Miles Turner. And do you think Porzingis to the Pacers is a good idea? Plenty more still coming up on the show. This is a Monday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch. We've got you on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. We've been talking about the collapse on the back nine yesterday by Lexi Thompson. Unfortunately, representing the USA on the back nine of a U.S. Open, and Lexi Thompson falls short by a shot and misses out on the possible playoff, and as a result ends up blowing that five-shot lead that she had and loses the U.S. Open championship. But what are some other memorable collapses or chokes in sports? Of course, we've had so many of them that have been mentioned. The J.R. Hildebrand fourth quarter spin at the Indy 500 in the 2011 final lap. Cubs in the 69 pennant race losing to the Mets. We had the Bill Buckner play in the Boston New York Mets World Series. What else did we have? Of course, Reggie Miller and his moments against the New York Knicks at one point, 8 points in 9 seconds, at another point giving the choke sign to Spike Lee. But what do you remember? 28-3 also mentioned. The Falcons with a 28-3 lead over the Patriots in the Super Bowl ended up losing that. What are famous choke jobs in sports? 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Tin Caps bullpen, I won't say it's a choke job, but the Tin Caps bullpen has clearly been struggling. Starters are getting good outings. And I know, as a former pitcher, it's kind of frustrating if you do your job for five innings and you turn it over to the bullpen and they continue to let leads slip away or games get out of hand late. It can be rather disappointing and frustrating as a starter. But it's been the story, really, with the Tin Caps. Every time they hand it to the bullpen, it's kind of sit on the edge of your seat and bite your nails and hold on. And over the weekend, a couple of tough performances led to a couple of losses for the Tin Caps. They did have an exciting win on Friday, 4-3. They came from behind. They were down 2-0, but they ended up coming from behind, getting the winning run in the bottom of the eighth inning, and then holding on with Carter Lowen. He's one guy that's been a real bright spot out of the bullpen. He comes out there, and everybody should watch the radar gun that's on the beautiful video board, because he will deliver it at about 97, maybe even 98 miles per hour when he comes in the ninth inning. And he finished off the game and got the save on Friday. But Tin Caps end up splitting the six-game series against Cedar Rapids. Now they've got a six-game series that starts tomorrow night at Parkview Field. They stay right here at home, and they'll take on Lake County. Games on Tuesday through Friday start at 7:05, Saturday night 6:35, and then on Sunday a 1:05 start. And, of course, all Tin Caps games can be heard right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. 46862, if you want to connect with us here on the show, that's the text line presented by Parkview Sports Medicine. Also, don't forget, you can always follow us on Twitter. We're at Sports Rush 1380, at 1380 The Fan, Also, you can connect with Caleb and I. I'm at Brett Rump Sports, and he is at Caleb Hatch on Twitter. And also, make sure if you miss any of the Sports Rush that you always keep up by going to our podcast page. You can find it by searching for it through wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, including Apple or Spotify. And make sure when you get there, you follow us for free wherever you listen to the Sports Rush podcast. If you have trouble finding it, just go to our website at 1380thefan.com. Comets open the playoffs tomorrow night against Wichita. Those games will be played Tuesday and Wednesday on the road, and then they'll get back into Fort Wayne to start home games on Friday night at the Coliseum, Saturday night if necessary, and Monday, game five, if needed, against Wichita. All right, Caleb, so I wanted to talk a little bit about this big NFL deal that went down this weekend. Julio Jones goes from Atlanta to AFC South opponent, Tennessee. You remember last week I talked to Kevin Bowen and I said the one thing I could see the Colts doing, and probably the only way it would make sense for the Colts to get Julio Jones, is strictly to keep him from going to a divisional opponent that you have to play twice a year, especially if you're concerned about the quality of your cover corners. Well, now you've got Tennessee loading up, and this offense and the potential balance of this Tennessee offense kind of scares me a little bit, because now you've got good receivers on both sides. You've got Derrick Henry in the backfield. Ryan Tannehill, I still can't claim he's like a top 10 quarterback, but I think he's a comfortable top 15 or 16 quarterback, and I think he manages the game well. He's got a strong arm. Some of the comments that Julio Jones had made prior to the trade is he wanted to go to somebody who's a winner, and he wanted to play with a quarterback that has a deep vertical arm. That's why I started to think of Mahomes and Josh Allen, because, and even though I don't think Kansas City and Buffalo were being mentioned a lot in the Julio Jones sweepstakes, I do think those are teams that Julio Jones would have been excited to go play for because of the type of quarterback they have. Is Tannehill that guy? What do you think this does for Tennessee? And in some respects, what does it mean for the Colts?
I think, to me, it puts Tennessee back in the driver's seat to be the favorite in the division, because you have A.J. Brown and Julio Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Can't forget Derrick Henry as far as the running game goes. I think they edge the Colts. I mean, look, Tannehill is solid, like you said. I mean, he's probably top 15, you know, top 12 to 15 quarterbacks in the NFL among starters. Derrick Henry's probably the best running back in the NFL. I don't think that's really up for a whole lot of debate there.
If you didn't have Derrick Henry, would Tannehill still be a top 12 to 15 quarterback? In other words, does he get the benefit of having such a great running game that I don't know that it's we expect less from Tannehill or he has to do less? But in some ways, I'm like, okay, let's take Henry away and see if Tannehill can carry this offense as a quarterback on his own. Then we can really judge him for what he is as far as the ranks of top quarterbacks in the NFL.
I mean, obviously, having Derrick Henry helps a lot. I don't think Tannehill would be as good. I mean, you look at how he struggled in Miami. Sometimes a situation is just not the right situation for a player. I think that was the case with Tannehill. He comes to Tennessee. They get a running back who turns out to be a star, and it clicks. It works. And I think that's how it's played out. And I don't think anyone's going to argue that Tannehill is, you know, a top five guy, but it's not just the ability. It's the pieces you have around you. And some guys make players around them better no matter who they are. I mean, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning are excellent examples. Aaron Rodgers. But there are so few of those guys, even in the NFL, period.
It's kind of interesting that every team that has an offense or a quarterback that struggles tries to upgrade a quarterback, where the question that I just asked you had kind of a second layer of meaning to it, which is, if you're a general manager and you've got a quarterback that's got a pretty decent skill set, and the name that comes to mind is Sam Darnold and what just happened in New York, where they never really had the established running game. The question is, would a Sam Darnold with his skill set be a Ryan Tannehill if you put a Derrick Henry in his backfield?
He could be. I mean, we don't know because Darnold's had a lot of health issues too. I mean, does he have the ability? Yes, he wouldn't have been picked second a couple years ago if people didn't think he had the ability and we saw him in college, what he could do. I think sometimes, you know, like I just said, for Tannehill, new situation, it's worked out. I think for Sam Darnold getting out of the Jets, I mean, that's going to help anyone. It's going to give you a better chance because it's just a mess of an organization. And a lot of the teams that are constantly drafting quarterbacks are bad for a reason. It's because they're bad at evaluating talent. And I'm not saying that Darnold isn't talented, but it's not just the quarterback position that they're bad at evaluating. They're bad at everything when it comes to the draft process.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We'll come back. It's a Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Back final time on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix 4 to 6. Don't forget, coming up at tomorrow's show, we have our weekly visit with TinCast manager Anthony Contreras. TinCast baseball starts tomorrow all week long at Parkview Field. 7:05 will be the first pitch tomorrow night. 6:45 the pregame show with the Hoopy Insurance Services pregame with Mike Maz on the radio call. All right, tonight we've got NBA basketball as the Bucks-Nets go at it for game two. This one's in Brooklyn, but it's without James Harden. Milwaukee a one-point favorite, and I'm giving up the point. I'm taking Milwaukee. Caleb, who you got?
I'm taking Milwaukee as well.
Game two on TNT, part of the doubleheader. Doesn't start till 10 o'clock. Oh, it's going to be a tough morning once again tomorrow. But the Denver Nuggets are at the Phoenix Suns. Suns are five-point favorites. I'm taking points. You give me five, I got the Joker. I'm taking the Nuggets with 5 points.
Yeah, I'd take Nuggets plus five overall, though. Give me the Suns.
Yeah, I know. I like the Suns in the series. As I said earlier, I think this is where not having Jamal Murray ends up paying the price to the Denver Nuggets, because you've got too many weapons for the Suns, and Murray would be a big matchup. That'll do it for us. Thanks to Justin Cohn and Dave Goodmiller. This has been a Monday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.